Of the Skies program. I'm Carlos Campo, president here at Ashland University, joined as always by my friend and colleague, Dennis Montecruces. Dennis, how are you? Here we are on the banks of the Ohio River. Not really on the banks of any river or any lake. But, you know, they're calling for maybe a little bit of snow tonight. Did you hear about that?
I heard about this. It seems like we're entitled to get snow at least once a month or so.
It's not a big deal. Now, in New York City recently, they had quite a little dusting there, but here in the studio, we're surrounded by such warmth, and it's generated by the students here. We've got Chelsea, Lauren, Jackson, Bryn, and Maddie running the show. It's true. We are the world headquarters for nice people, and our students, we had an event last night, Dennis. We both attended where a scholar from Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum, was talking. It was really kind of a dark subject, wasn't it? I mean, he was talking about the Holocaust and in particular what the Jewish people knew and didn't know as they were approaching their horrible fate. But I was stunned by how, first of all, the overall setting. And I'm just saying how proud I am to be at an institution where our students are respectful. You know, there were some questions afterward, but even during the event, I know that one of our professors actually went to Yad Vashem along with 16 other institutional representatives. And she said at a recent meeting that 16 of the 18 of them have had very violent protests to events like this on their own campus since that time. That didn't happen last night.
No, not even close.
And so I say with deep sincerity how grateful I am to our student body for their respectful approach to these issues and to our commitment. We don't always get it right, but the idea that we're teaching students how to think and not what to think. And we hope that even with the Holocaust, you know, there are Holocaust deniers on the planet today. And there's a part of me that thinks there is nothing more ignorant than someone who would say that.
Right.
But we would allow that person to speak. And while we would be the first to say, we believe you're wrong on that issue, and here's why we believe that, we had a remarkable session last night. And today, here we're segueing, transitioning, and, you know, talking about issues that we want to look at the brighter side. You know, last night was maybe the darkest moment in human history. And we want to look back on...
Well, last night wasn't the darkest
moment. Well, referencing, good point, referencing that darkest moment. But now we want to look back on 2023 and maybe think about those feel-good stories, you know, in education. Matter of fact, these aren't really stories, but interesting events that happened in 2023. We've been reading about CRISPR technology for a while and, you know, some of the potential dangers of CRISPR, this gene splicing technology. But it was exciting. It was actually in 2023 that the first sickle cell patient, they used CRISPR technology to prevent sickle cell, and now they're saying it may be cured forever. I mean, I think about things like that. When you think about a feel-good story for 2023 that has an educational tie, you know, another one, which is, I laugh about it, but all the research shows we actually get students up too early, particularly in elementary and high school.
Right.
And Scientific American recently did an article on it. Well, a high school teacher said to her students, you need to write and do some research on this and then send it in. And they did it, and their school district changed the start time for their high school based upon the research, and now they're starting later, and their results are better. So that's, you know.
How late are they starting?
At 9:30, I think, is when the classroom is starting. I also read that scientists froze rat kidneys for 100 days and then thawed them. And they worked perfectly fine when they transplanted them. All of these things happened in 2023, but we want to dig in a little bit more. I want to hear from you about stories, some feel-good stories. Let's turn our attention to the positive things. It's not easy sometimes when you're watching the skies. They can be cloudy and rainy. But how about a couple of stories that you think back on in 2023 that had some positive elements to them?
Well, I'm not sure there's anything as exciting as freezing rat kidneys.
I know. I let off with the highlight. I have to agree with you.
That's right. I would say the things that most grabbed me are things that I'm not sure where they'll come down.
Okay.
So I want to be optimistic about them, and I'll lead off with AI. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of a late 2022 story, but really 23 is where it's burgeoning. So all of these things like ChatGPT, Bard, Copilot, and what's interesting is that they just keep there's different flavors of them, right? So each company will tweak it for their particular company, for their desires. They'll make it, you know, they'll try to avoid bias in this direction, or they'll right. have bias in that direction. But it's just a burgeoning field. And while, of course, it's going to produce many challenges, there are a lot of things that are exciting about this. So I don't know if you saw this, the Sherpa. It's do you know about this one?
I know what a Sherpa is, but I don't right. think I've heard okay. this version of it.
So yet. At Stanford University, mm-hmm. so the professors there are worried about, well, how do we, you know, how can we assign papers because, hey, these AIs will of course help the students write the paper. That's terrible.
Right.
But one thing that they're doing is very interesting. So Sherpa is a program, is an AI that will do oral exams with the students.
Hmm.
So the students will read some text, and then the AI will generate questions and conduct the oral exam with mm-hmm. the students, and then either the professor will either take the video, or it can be turned into a transcript by the AI, mm-hmm. and so the AI can pick out questions and follow up and so on, and see, does the student really know what they're talking about?
Mm, I like it.
Yeah, so that's kind of just one application of many. Mm. And also, of course, I think it helps students. It gives students a chance to be able to learn on their own in a way where, let's say, students are often afraid of asking questions. They don't want to ask the dumb question. Mm-hmm. Ask the AI. You can do it even in class, mm-hmm. depending on the policy of using laptops and such.
Right.
But you can just ask the AI and get good answers. So it's going to be, of course, a big challenge. And the plagiarism worry is an issue, at least if you're not going to Harvard. And so not even a laugh. Boy, not even a snicker, I tell you. Tough audience. But, yeah, I mean, so, of course, there are challenges with this, but the tools that this provides, as we learn how to use it in constructive ways, is great. And it's not so terribly expensive either. So, I mean, there's a cost. I mean, a lot of them, the charge is $20 a month for ChatGPT-4, for instance. But Copilot on Microsoft, that's free. I mean, you have Bing,
right?
You know, the search engine, you can use it without cost. And there are often, let's say, slightly older versions of these AIs that are available for either for free or cheaply, or more cheaply than the $20 a month. So it's a pretty democratic thing. It can be used, and people will develop skills in using it and teachers and how to use it. So again, I think there's a lot of promise there. We'll have to wait and see, but
I'm with you on this one. I know we may be in the minority. I'm hearing a lot of faculty in particular concerned around AI. Others think, you know, these things develop sentient qualities. You know, what could happen next? But, you know, what you've described, think about what that looks like if you have an AI interactive textbooks. These are things mm-hmm. at Carnegie Mellon, you know, they already have some of this in place.
Right.
We're truly starting with very young people. The textbook is responding to the learning style of the student. The way they ask, let's just start with mathematics. They'll ask basic math skills, and as the student responds, they see which ones they miss. They mm-hmm. then instruct them in different modes of instruction,
right.
even, and then shift it further. I mean, frankly, when you talk about equalizer, you know, playing field becoming flattened, boy, what an opportunity. As you say, open access, technology-driven.
And just to build on that, so there are also platforms pre-AI that are based on the idea of spaced repetition and interleaving. So you even have chess software that does that to help people learn to play to memorize their chess openings.
Mm.
And so if you forget in a particular variation
yes.
what move you're supposed to play,
Rui Lopez,
right.
let's see, are you supposed to play the pawn? Oh, well.
Yeah, so exactly. But then you'll get tested on the things that you miss more often. And so the combination of the AI doing what you were saying with that, where you have spaced repetition, where you have interleaving and all these other techniques that are known to really foster learning, fantastic.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I have high hopes there. We were talking about young people. One of the stories I read about, and I know it was just one school district, but with this lost generation because of COVID, L.A., one of their school districts, the largest school district in the nation, put in what they call transitional universal kindergarten, pre-K. So it was actually a pre-K where they were allowing students to have a full day of pre-K to sort of make up for, you know, some of this lost learning. In many ways, it was it's a burgeoning investment that lots of counties are making. And to me, if you look at what pre-K and great kindergarten education, and I say great because they're certainly not all created equal, but there are now national norms and standards for this, and to me, there's a lot of promise in what we could do here. If you track how those students do, especially as they continue to get challenged grade after grade, there's no question that by second or third grade, they're well ahead of their peers in that regard. So kudos to LA. You know, they all often take a lot of heat for things that are happening in their school districts, but I think that was certainly one that stood out to me. How about another one from you? Is there another feel-good story from 23? I've got a million of them.
Yeah,
I feel like Henny Youngman.
I've got a few. So,
good.
Again, it's one of these things where it could work out really well. We'll have to wait and see.
Okay, let's see.
But certainly the end of affirmative action. So I think, again, that's a positive. I mean, now the question is, will schools just find other ways of getting to the same point? That's a concern, but I think to the extent, and this goes with also something we talked about recently, the return of the SAT and the ACT, that, let's say, attempts to put social engineering and things of that sort so much to the forefront that it hurts quality, it hurts merit, that's a bad thing. So to the extent, even if it's not really that they desired it, but just the other stuff didn't work or was found unconstitutional, I'm glad that merit is still being put back on the table here as a requirement, as it should be.
Well, and you'll remember, though, that, you know, the flip side to that coin, the concern that we raised was in places where affirmative action has been removed, you do see lower numbers for groups who have had long struggles with
some
access.
Yes, but not always.
Not always.
There were places where there was not really any big diminution of minorities of underrepresented people at the college level, university level.
Well, it's one of the things we'll continue to monitor and report back out. You know, one of the things that I was glad to see in 2023, and this is a growing trend as well. I don't know that we could point to one specific person who's responsible, but when I think about charter schools and particularly high schools that are attuned to things that are innovative, I have to read a couple for our listeners because they were so unusual. Here's one. We were just talking about New York earlier. So here's one in New York that is called the Urban Assembly New York Harbor School, where a ferry ride down Manhattan where the East River meets the Hudson, you know that spot pretty well. Students choose among 8 maritime-themed career and technical education pathways before they close out their freshman year. They are clad in life vests, protective goggles, and welder's masks, and they get a chance to earn industry certifications in marine science or technology before they graduate. What do you think?
That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about the ones that you've heard in the past, that one really was different. Here's one other one where it's the Blue Valley Center for Advanced Professional Studies in Overland Park, Kansas, not far from us here. Students spend about 3 hours a day working with professionals in one of 6 industries, from food science to aerospace engineering. They're housed in a light-filled 3-story building that more closely resembles a high-tech office, and the program enjoys support from local school district, which created this half-day program for juniors and seniors. Then they return to their neighborhood high schools for required coursework and for accreditation purposes. The entire enterprise is really a class, but they're treated as a working adult, and they now hold dual degrees in physics, applied mathematics, and statistics. This is one alumna who from Johns Hopkins, and she served as a project manager for one of the aerospace companies, Blue Origin, that works in conjunction with the school. You know, those are two of just a couple of examples of many, many schools that have really taken on this innovative approach. You know, we've seen many in the health sciences. So one of the things that research shows is if you can get students involved and interested early on in the health sciences, especially men involved in health sciences, so many men step away from health sciences if they think that nursing is what they're going to face, right, because they just don't understand that there's so much more to the profession than what they may think. that we lose a lot of opportunity there. So that's another one that I think has a lot of legs.
So are these scalable, or are these just at elite schools? What's the relationship?
Yeah, that's
there?
A great question. I think it depends. You know, I think many of them all are scalable. You know, this maritime one feels like it's right. going to be limited at some level. But there are a number that are tremendously scalable. I think that those that link to both colleges, universities, and then to the community for internships and industry. I think that's one of the things that's very interesting. Too often, we are sheltering students from what we would often call the real world and what's happening in the business world, because business leaders are generally tremendously generous, mm-hmm. and sharing that information, hearing from students, and then these business leaders saying to students, here are some of the things you really need to prepare for. So I really do think that there is scalability here, and what I'm hearing from a lot of the students in these kinds of programs is it just feels different, and it's energizing in ways that, gosh, the same old has been especially difficult, I think, for these students who are used to such technology and difference, right? That they're entertained, it feels like, all the time. And then they get to high school and they feel like, gosh, is this really all there is? Teaching and learning seems so boring. So I like the fact that innovation has moved into these areas. So to me, it's another feel-good story from 2023.
It is. And I mean, I've certainly heard from people in the business community over the years how unprepared students who graduate and then go into those fields seem to be. So if they're getting this kind of early sense, and not just like a field trip, but I mean, they're actually participating there as interns or maybe even employees.
Right.
Fantastic, right? So they're better prepared, and it works out well for everybody.
Well, I think many of the students in the studio would be aware of this, but our own business school does something like a Shark Tank. Lots of schools have adopted something like this. But I heard recently something between 15 and 20 of these businesses have made it. You know, what, 9 out of 10 businesses fail? Well, we've got about 15 or 20 that are making it, and at least one of them had a top-line revenue of over $1 million last year. And so it's exciting to see that kind of innovation take off. I think this is truly one of the most entrepreneurial generations ever. And lots of students are saying, you know, this pathway that you took, that many people of your generation took, just isn't interesting. You know, we don't want to work for Dow Chemical. Sorry, didn't mean to call them out in particular, but or work for a large company, no matter how good they are. I'd rather be my own boss. You know, I'd rather set my own hours, you know, that kind of thing.
And that goes with the AI
issue
as well. So, I mean, that is a nice fit to it, too.
It really does. I think about the fact, I think I read recently that students helped work on a new laser that is working to deflect lightning. So lightning rods that had been used in the past will now be replaced by lasers that can actually conduct it, you know, of course, away from a building or another area. You know, these are the kinds of things I hear and read about, and I think we often don't realize the untapped potential that students have. So I think, you know, those are just a couple of examples. Other feel-good stories from 23 from your perspective?
Sure. Well, I think this kind of goes a little bit along those lines, where there's this rise of alternative credentialing.
Yes.
Where you get these micro-credentials rather than having to go through a four-year program. And, of course, if every four-year program was like Ashland University's, then you should, of course, come here. There's no question about that. But I mean, of course, we've talked about this many times on the program, how expensive universities are. Of course, you're taking 4 years, and most people, I think it's, what, 5 years on average?
Yes.
So if you can be done in a year or two and get a very good job, and you can always, of course, go back and do, you know, continue your education later, but to be able to just get going, and especially if you don't have a lot of money to start with, right? So, I mean, it's a good way to get in relatively cheaply, get out quickly, and that this has become increasingly popular, I think, is great. So it's not that this should replace universities, but not everyone is necessarily ready for a university right away.
Right.
And so even if you go back, I mean, a lot of people don't, but you might, this is a great way to get into the game. And that this is becoming more common, I think, is a good thing.
You know, I have to agree. It's like anything else. If micro-credentialing is at the same level, at a very high level, and is done well, and particularly has this entree, as you point out, to a job. And more industries are offering these credentials. So they're saying, do ours, right? If you complete our micro-credential, we guarantee. I think it's that guaranteed pathway that students are looking for. And I think you even point to this idea of how AI can be a preparatory model for a lot of these things as well.
And I would add, especially because, I mean, a lot of these not all, but a lot of micro-credentialing work is in the computer field.
Yes.
And AI helps you code. I mean, right. So it's not just that it helps write some kind of paper for an English class or a philosophy course.
Yes.
But it can code.
It can.
So that helps along that line.
A lot of encouraging things on the horizon, and I think our listeners are just, they're in a whole new mindset just after this episode. I think we've now flipped the script.
And it's not just about frozen rat kidneys.
No, exactly. Just when I thought I'd left that behind, you brought it back to us. Well, we're grateful that you've joined us today here at Ashland University in the JDM studios. Write to us at president@ashland.edu, and we will see you in the interim. We'll see you back here again at the Watches of the Skies program here at Ashland University. Have a great day.